Hello and welcome everyone. Can you all hear me? Yes, okay, good. I apologize. I was having a little bit of trouble there. For some reason I wasn't able to hear what was happening, and anyways, it looks like it all sorted itself out. So thank you all for joining me this evening. And I thought we would yeah, just take a moment and go inward. And so join me in taking a couple deep and full belly breaths, letting go of the day, letting go of the week. Letting go of your mind. How's that for a concept? How's that for an experience? What is life like when we let go of our mind? What is our experience? When we step beyond thought, step beyond all the thinking, the strategizing, the figuring, and just come into this moment. Begin to experience the fullness, the richness of this moment. And so I encourage you to relax the throat chakra, to allow awareness to descend into the space of the heart. And notice this gentle sense of aliveness of the heart, this gentle sense of radiance and beauty. And can you give yourself permission to fall into this? To fall into this space of love, this space of innocence, this space of quiet freedom. And so I invite you to join me in noticing this freedom, this spaciousness, in the space we call the mind, the throat, the jaw, the heart, the belly, the pelvis, the legs, the feet, the arms, the hand. Can we radically open? And just notice, what is life like? What is life like when we radically open to ourselves? What is life like when we let go of all that thinking, all that mentality, when we give ourselves permission to fully let go of the past? And just be here now. And experience your own divinity, the divinity of this world, the divinity of life, all one divinity. But can you open and be receptive? Receptive to your nature, which is God's nature. And so, of course, if there's anything you need to do, if there's anyone you need to forgive, anything you need to let go of, any storyline you need to put down. Anyone that needs to be forgiven. We welcome that in this moment. The great letting go of ego. Great letting go of that which is unnecessary. And we step into that which is beautiful, that which is good, that which is divine about our nature. Can we step and fully come into, fully open up, fully receive this beauty which we are? And so from this place of openness, from this place of receptivity, can we realize, can we acknowledge what we are? All of us. All of us are this absolute beauty, this absolute divinity. All of us are these living miracles. For we are life itself. Life itself, individuated, manifest in these human beings, these spiritual beings. Can we smile at our divine nature? Can we embrace our human nature? Can we smile at this beautiful thing called life? And so with this, I invite you to stay connected with your heart, stay connected as always with your experience. And I have a very, very long list of questions today, but by all means, if you have something, feel free to raise your hand or offer the question forward. And I'll move it to the top of the list. But before I get into the questions, right before I was showing up to class tonight, showing up for our meeting, I was watching the closing ceremony of the Olympics. It was a real testament, a real testament of our humanity. The oneness of humanity, our ability to work together, our ability even to fight and to wrestle and to argue and to challenge, and yet to come together and smile and to celebrate and join, literally, as one nation, one planet under God, one humanity, one race, one species. It's such a beautiful thing. It really made me smile. You know, this past week I've seen a little bit too much news on the shootings in Florida and all the fighting that's going on in the political arena. To see such division. And in fact, I was actually quite close by to the shooting. I was visiting my mother in Florida. Each year I try to spend as much time as I can with her because my father died a couple years ago, and I like to check on her. But while I was there in Florida, you know, there's that brutal shooting that happened with all those young children. And of course, the children's response to stand up to the NRA, to stand up to our politicians, to stand up for Of the right to live in a safe world. It's unfortunate that it's taken so many mass shootings for people to begin to listen, for people to be to speak about this topic of a wiser gun control. Highly necessary. There's a lot of things that need to change in our world. But when I saw the Olympics tonight, it gave me a greater sense of hope. Greater sense of hope. You know, if you can imagine what it's like to be a hockey player and be out there on the ice and, you know, be beating the hell out of your opponents and then beating the hell out of you, and then when the game is over, to smile, to shake hands, to walk together into a great arena where all of you, all of us are celebrated, all nations, all peoples are celebrated. It gives you a sense of hope, a great sense of hope. And so I really smiled because our world needs this. We need more hope, more healing, more of a willingness to come together. You know, one of the questions I kept receiving again and again, you know, this last week was, you know, people telling me they wanted to, you know, follow the teachings of Ramana Maharshi and in a sense leave the world. Leave the world. You know, just go off somewhere and abandon the world. And so whether it's the teachings of Ramana or the teachings of Nisargadatta or Vivekananda or whoever it was, Yogananda, you know, all these individuals, you know, many of them who came out of monastic traditions or at least traditions of being celibate and not engaged in life. And you know, that was wonderful at the time. But now it's time for engagement. Now is the time for engagement with life. For this is how God is evolving in this world. God is inviting us to examine all of our actions, all of our politics. Like Jay is saying, we have to examine all this violence that we have, all these violent thoughts, this violent political activity, these wars that we engage in. It's important that we examine all of this, not in a place of philosophy or a philosophical way, because in a philosophical way, I think it's clear the world needs peace. But we really need to come into our hearts and allow our hearts to lead us, our hearts to guide us. The young man that I was meeting with this week, he was a poet. And he was speaking about, he kept having this desire to leave the world. Now, I actually met with two poets this week, now that I think about it. And both of them had this desire, you know, to leave the world. But I smiled. I said, Rumi didn't leave the world. He engaged in the world. He made love to life. And this is what's being asked for in the year 2018. We must have a spirituality which is engaged, a spirituality which is connected. A spirituality which is inclusive, not something that's just trying to take us out of the world, but of course if we're going to embrace life, that means we have to embrace the mess, we have to embrace evolution, we have to embrace the challenge. Oh, the challenge of our old habitual way of being and saying no to that and saying yes to that which is higher, that which is true, that which is beautiful. We don't need more monks in this world. We need people who are willing to be engaged, who are willing to be monks in the world, nuns in the world, who are willing to live their practice. And yes, so, Megan, your question, how can we live in this messy world as sensitive beings? That's a great question. I find the deeper I go into spiritual awakening process, the less equipped I feel to deal with the pain I witness. Yes, I'll tell you a funny story that happened to me. So last night, I had this dinner party to go to. It was my wife had her birthday, and one of her good friends had a birthday this last week, and so everyone decided to get together last night. But before I went to the party, I found myself sitting down and watching a tremendous amount of news on the school shooting that happened, and all the politics that was happening around it, and arguments and this and that. And I noticed the more I watched, the more anxious I became. I felt all this anxiety, and I felt the pain of the children. I felt the fear. I felt the sadness of the parents. I listened to the people speak who were EMTs and who worked in the ambulances and the emergency room, and them describe, what a AR-15 rifle can do to the human body. And oh, it just broke my heart. I was feeling so much pain. And Megan, I can tell you, I'm about as sensitive as they come. I'm ridiculously sensitive. I feel so much pain from others, from the world. It can be debilitating at times. And so I went out to dinner, and my wife and everyone else was having this lovely time, and of course I felt spacious and this deep and profound sense of peace. But simultaneously, I felt all this pain, like tremendous pain rumbling around in my consciousness. It was so much pain that I had trouble focusing at the party, just listening to what the others were saying. And there was even a couple times when I broke out in tears because I was still connected with that pain. And then anyways, the party ended, and the dinner ended, and we went home. And the next morning, I woke up like at 3 a.m. So that's last night. And I found myself having these nightmares. I was experiencing the pain. I was connected with some of the beings who, lost their lives and who were, lost in this world or that world, before they. Because sometimes when we die in a tragic way, we have a confusing journey to heaven. And so I felt all this panic as I woke up, and I sat down to meditate, and the pain intensified. But one of the things I've learned, Megan, is that when we're a sensitive being, our ego tends to scream at us to run from the pain, to run from it. And in a sense, that's what all egos do. They run from pain. They seek pleasure and avoid pain at all costs. But I learned a long time ago not to avoid pain. So I breathe more fully into the pain. I open to it. And as I open to the pain, it started to ache out of my body. It started to tremble. Tears came. A sense of panic came, but also It was just a feeling of a great emptying out, almost like the pain was being liberated. And hell, this wasn't even my pain. I was just experiencing the pain of others. Of course, my heart hurt. It hurt from what was going on. From this terrible tragedy that happened. But as I opened and embraced the pain, my body began to shake, and it emptied out of me. And then the real funny thing was, is for me, it's a funny experience for me, is, I was left with such a bliss, an overwhelming bliss. A bliss that was so intense that, again, it was it was hard for me to think, it was hard for me to function. Because there was so much bliss and so much freedom moving through my body. And it's not, I'm not saying this because I'm wanting you to think that I'm special. But I'm just like you, Megan. I'm sensitive. And the further I walked on this path, I realized I was becoming more and more sensitive and more frightened of pain. It just started to feel everything. In fact, any time I stand with anyone, I feel what's happening in their body. Sometimes their thoughts even arise in my consciousness. It's a really common thing. Oftentimes, my students, their dream worlds come conveyed my dream worlds. Now, my teacher, he used to tell me about this, and I always thought it was silly, like that he kept telling me this. I was like, why does he keep telling me this? And now I'm seeing. I'm having all these experiences myself. But the point of this is when we're sensitive, we must realize what the truth is. The truth is that we are greater than pain. That pain is just an experience. It's just an experience. It's just a feeling. And the ego will tell us continually that we can be overwhelmed by pain, but when you open to it and embrace it, you become Christ-like. Literally, you become Christ-like. For this is was the movement of Christ in the world. He walked toward pain. Unfortunately, sensitivity is very synonymous with yogic nature. But when you begin to discover that you can be sensitive and be unmoved by the pain, and by unmoved, that doesn't mean you don't have emotions. Unmoved means you stay rooted in your true nature. You stay rooted in the truth. When you stay rooted in the truth and you embrace pain, you're not overwhelmed with it. Your body will be overwhelmed with it, so I'll be clear here. Your body will shake and tremble, but this is what bodies do. In fact, our bodies oftentimes are great sponges, and so Megan, one of the things I also recommend, besides embracing the pain, is exercise. And so if you have a strong yoga practice or an aerobic exercise practice, because what that does is it helps flood your body. Flood your body with fresh air, fresh oxygen. It floods it with light and grace. Then the pain and the emotions, whether they're your emotions or someone else's, they empty out. And so after, I sat down and for my meditation this morning, I got up and I just felt this desire to run. And so I went out in the snow and ran through the snow. And then the bliss started to intensify more and more, and it got really ridiculous at that point. I actually came home after a while from running, and I had to just lay on the couch and get my body fully grounded because there was so much bliss. I was, I was almost starting to drool on myself. And so, yes, there's, and this teaching, it works on so many levels, like Jay was saying. Regina had this experience where she experienced the pain, but she didn't get caught in it. You can still stay rooted in your true nature. Absolutely. For our true nature is always here. It doesn't leave us when pain occurs. It doesn't leave us when anxiety occurs. Hell, if our true nature left us when we had anxiety or sadness or fear or felt overwhelmed, well, that would have been the end of us. Our true nature is that which is consistent. In fact, Megan, your true nature is the one that notices that you're sensitive. And so can we identify with that which notices our sensitivity, that which notices the pain? Not the pain, not the egoic reaction, not the sensitive reaction. But can we identify with, can we step into, or even ask, who notices that I'm a sensitive being? Who notices that the further and deeper I go, the further I walk on this path of spiritual awakening? The more sensitive I become, who notices that? So that's the part we need to step into. For that's the part that's free of everything. Free of everything. And so, yes, after the last time we met, I think I spoke about the chakras, but I had another question here about the chakras. Do chakras really need healing or balancing or opening? What's the deal with that? That's a that's a fun way of asking it. What's the deal with that? So your chakras are all perfect. Absolutely perfect. Do your chakras need healing? No, they don't need healing to be healed. They're perfect. But oftentimes what sits on top of our chakra centers is different aspects of our human ego. So for example, on our heart chakra, that tends to be where our emotional center is. Our emotional cellular memory. So your heart is always perfect. Your heart chakra cannot be broken. But your human heart, can it be broken? Sure. It's not really broken, but it feels like it's broken. Can we have heaviness and sadness and anger and guilt, Like, can we have anger in the second and third chakra? Sure. Sure. But how do we work with this? Well, just like I was describing before, you open to the pain. As you open to the pain and embrace it with love, the pain will empty out of your body, literally. And the way you normally experience that is through trembling, shaking, crying, or maybe a bunch of old memories float through your consciousness and you see them. But if you've repressed strong emotions, then yes, those strong emotions, those strong repressions tend to cover up our chakra centers. And so I like the idea of opening. Just opening to our energetic body and just noticing what's there. What's there? Just like when you're, If you were ever a little kid played in the mud, I did that a lot as a kid. I'd get covered in mud, and it's like your body, your skin is covered in mud. But all this emotional pain, if you don't grieve emotional pain while it arises, it just stays in the body. If you have anger that's unexpressed, it stays in the body. If you feel wronged by life, it stays in the body. If you've lived in an abusive household and you're told to shut the hell up all the time, all that kind of stuff stays in the body. And so the question is, well, how do we liberate that? Well, one of the ways is first we need to be aware of what's within us. And so we step into this place that is quiet, that is open, that is innocent. And we notice there's aspects of my humanity which are in pain. And so if there's something within us that's in pain, you treat it like a child. If a child's in pain, you breathe into her. You say, "Sweetie, I'm so sorry. How can I help you? How can I love you? I'm going to take deep, full breaths into you." Now, as a parent, one of the things that we do to soothe the child is we take deep, full breaths while we're holding the child. And what we begin to discover is that the child's breath starts to mirror our breath. And so if we have trauma within our nervous system, we bring love into the trauma. We bring love into the trauma. Yes. And so Suzanne asks, how do we liberate an emotion like rage or anger that doesn't arise, but you know it's in there somewhere? Oh yeah, that's good. That's a great question. And so rage and anger, they normally are in the lower belly. And sometimes in the solar plexus. So the solar plexus in the lower belly. But if you know that there's this inner fury within you, but you're having trouble getting it to empty out of you, you're having trouble getting this old repressed energy to move, one of the things I encourage you to do is to give voice to it. And this it can be quite helpful to write letters. So if you invoke the pain, the trauma, the old experience, and you write a letter from the perspective of the anger, you let the anger speak. So if it wants to say all kinds of great profanity of this and that, like, "Don't mess with me. How dare, I can't believe, you fucking did this to me. You ruined my life," and you say it. You give the emotion permission to speak it or to write it while you are silently witnessing it from a place of love. From a place of love. When you start to honor and acknowledge what's within you, the anger will actually begin to move. Now, most spiritual people, hell, most people in general, are terrified of anger. And so they just keep it repressed within them. And then they have these little angry outbursts when no one's looking, or road rage, or this or that, or they're good at meditation and then yell at their kids, "Hell, I can say that I was guilty of that once upon a time. I had too much anger within my nervous system." And then I would get really irritated with my son when he was quite young. And so, but at some point I realized what I was doing. I said, "Oh, this, I need to correct this. This isn't about him, it's about me." If you look at this thing that went on in Florida, With these kids. Afterwards, the kids got angry. And that was a valid response. So now it's not a time to be a good little Buddhist and say, oh, no anger should arise. Anger is simply a manifestation of power. And so when you acknowledge we're angry, that's the first step. Then you follow it up. You transform that anger into action. And that's what the kids are doing. They're marching in the streets. They're marching at the state capitol. They're not taking no for an answer. If you've seen some of these young high school kids who are survivors of the shooting, some of them have been on like 10 different talk shows. CNN, NBC, CBS, MSNBC. They've been on the late night shows. It's amazing. They're angry about something and they're transforming their anger into action. And see, again, this is the purpose of anger. Anger is simply repressed power. Repressed power. And so if you're feeling that the repression is deep, deep within us, and whether the repression is, self-induced repression or learned behavior, that you learn that you're not allowed to have a voice in the world, give yourself a voice. But I want to be clear here. If you're a little bit upset, with your wife or husband about, the way they folded the towels, that's a moment for you to bite your tongue and breathe and let it go. If someone in the house didn't do the dishes, we're not going to have an angry fit. That's a time to bite your tongue. But if children are being shot in schools, well, that's a time to go into the streets. That's a time to write some letters, to your Congress, your congressman or woman. It's a time to call the president out and say, hey, we need some support here in this world. We need good ideas, not bad ones. We need a change. And so if your anger is justified, you acknowledge it. You acknowledge it. And again, this is what helps to clear that heaviness that sits on top of your second or third chakra. And when you do that, when you clear the energy, the chakra naturally balances it itself. Now, by all means, if there's anyone who does chakra balancing or wants to go see a healer and get their chakras balanced, it's a beautiful thing. It just helps the chakras to wake up. It helps the energy to move. Actually helps you to cry and let go and release. And so, yes. And so do the chakras need healing? No, they're already perfect. Just like you and I, we're already perfect. But sometimes we come into this world, we get covered in mud. And sometimes it's our own mud, and sometimes it's someone else's mud. Sometimes it's just the mud of the cloud of consciousness. And so, yeah. Yeah, it can be healing to go and get a massage. It could be healing to, go and listen to the whatever it is, they do those healing chakra bowls meditations, where they open each chakra center through sound, this and that. And that's wonderful, but what's more empowering is you learn to do it yourself. If you have a relationship with the fullness of what you are, if you have a relationship with the head, the heart, the gut, the throat, the pelvis, and the countless other chakra centers which are available to us. I mean, hell, when I came back from my run today, I felt like I had 10,000 chakras awakened, throughout my spinal cord of my body. And so there's so much we can learn, there's so much we can open to if we're willing. If we're willing. So again, I keep getting this question of, well, how do the chakra centers relate to the wound? Well, many of us have experienced a great wound, a great pain in our life. And that pain is normally in the heart chakra or in the lower belly, or sometimes it's in the throat. You know, like I grew up in a house where we were told we shouldn't talk, we shouldn't question. So I had a great wound in my throat. I was afraid to speak. So I had to do a lot of work opening to that center, feeling the pain of it, voicing it, voicing it. And sometimes voicing it just means you voice it to yourself in a way where you are awake, connected with your heart, and you listen to your pain. And as you do, it's therapeutic. The pain empties out of you. It empties out of you. There's all these teachers who talk about letting go of the story, but if the story is persistent, we need to meet it with love from the heart. If the story is inconsequential, yeah, it's like by all means, let it go and don't listen to it. Let that thought empty out of you and a new one come forward. And so if a story is inconsequential, you can get away with ignoring it. And then stepping into something greater. But if a story is connected to a great wound that you've carried your whole life, if you ignore it, well, it'll create a great shadow in your life, great pain. And so, I have this question about inward action versus outward action. And I say, yes, both are necessary. Both are necessary. But of course, it's important if we see that we're banging our head against the wall, if we see that we're getting ourselves in trouble, if we see that nothing is changing in our life, the first thing we need to do is become quiet and meditate upon why is this happening? But when we meditate, we're not meditating from a perspective of a victim consciousness. We're meditating from a perspective of our divinity, from a perspective of curiosity and innocence. So when we step into a place that's innocent and curious, we can see when we are wrong. We can see when, oh, what I'm doing is not helpful. I had this experience the other day when I just walked into the bathroom and I looked into my eyes, and one of the first things I saw is I saw my father looking back at me. I saw like his humanity, his conditioning. But then I looked deeper. And I realized it wasn't just my father. It was like all of my Irish ancestors. All of them. And I saw their DNAs, their lives, you know, all of it. And that I was the evolving edge of them. You know, I don't really identify with being Irish, but but I am. My mother reminds me all the time because she's really proud of being Irish. But this, you know, what I was getting at was that willingness to look deeply. And when you look deeply, you begin to see new things. And so it was interesting for me to see, to feel connected with all these ancestors from the path. To see that I was the evolving edge. The evolving edge of this group of people. You know, that's one of the ways I could experience myself. And then as I looked deeply, I also smiled because I saw this innocence, this freedom, this love. And so it's that willingness to be connected. And open-hearted, awake, aware, away. You can begin to see everything. Everything about your behavior, about your conditioning, about your past, about your trajectory. And so this process of being inward, just having an inward orientation where you can see what is this humanity that I have? What direction is it headed? What habits does it have? Where did these habits come from? And then there's a greater spaciousness around it. You don't take it so seriously. It's easier to meet it with love. It's easier to break the chains of habit and align with something greater. With something greater. And so, Suzanne. So all the emotional debris covers the chakra centers. A healer can help, but the real work is done by yourself. Yes, this is true. And see, God designs it that way. God wants us to learn to do our own healing work so that we can become strong and Christ-like in the world. So from one perspective, every time you go to a healer, you give your power away. But if you're giving it away to someone who's good and helpful, it's like going and seeing a teacher. When you go and you see a teacher, in a sense, you have to give some of your power away. Just some of it. Anytime you're willing to listen and learn. But then a good teacher gives it right back to you. A good teaching gives it right back to you. So you open up, you're humble, and you learn and you grow. You become strong. So sometimes, when we're in a real rut, it's necessary to see a healer or a teacher. Hell, I spent decades of my life, studying with my teacher, and he was also a tremendous healer. Tremendous healer. I think I used to drive him crazy because there was so much karma that I would bring to him, so much pain and suffering. I was a real pain in the ass for my teacher. He used to tell me all the time, he said, "Jeez, Craig, you just have so much drama and pain in your life." And I would smile. I'd say, "I know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for bringing all this to you." But one of the, when I would meet with him, he would help to change my perspective. And then he would encourage me to go forward, to do the hard work. He'd say, "Craig, you're a child of God, a warrior, a spiritual warrior." And the beautiful thing about him is he always saw my goodness. He always saw my divinity first. And see, any great healer will do that. They'll see your divinity first. Because as we all sit here this evening, I feel your hearts. I feel your divinity. I feel blessed by your presence. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing when we come together in this way and say, yes, despite our humanity, despite our pain and suffering, despite our confusion and our neurosis and our neurotic behavior, that there's something absolutely beautiful, absolutely divine here. But see, when we do the work on our own, we develop what we call in Zen backbone. In Christianity, we call it Christ consciousness. This absolute strength, absolute faith. And faith is an incredible strength, it's an incredible power. And so, for most of us who've had, some level of pain, some level of, feeling unworthy, it's like a disease, on the planet. Feeling unworthy. Because when you're connected with your ego, you're connected with it and insecure, a great insecurity. And so one of the ways we make ourselves worthy, which we're already worthy, by the way, but the way we make ourselves worthy is through loving ourselves to death. When you make yourself the priority of your life, all of a sudden you become worthy. Worthy of love, worthy of your attention, worthy of your time, worthy of healing. But if you ignore yourself, you make yourself unworthy. Now, of course, all of us are worthy in our true nature. But it does us no good if we're busy spinning in stories of unworthiness. And so God has it designed this way that we must face our shadow, we must face our darkness. And as we do so, we discover these hidden gifts of strength, of voice, of courage, of faith, of truth, of unconditional love. The only way to discover unconditional love is through first loving yourself unconditionally, all the painful, sad, lonely, rejected aspects of yourself, the places that we hate. Are there simply to be loved? Simply to be loved. And yes, so I also received a number of questions about Kundalini, and I wasn't able to get to those. But one of the questions that I want to clarify is because a lot of people don't have this Kundalini awakening experience. And that's okay. It's, in fact, it's unnecessary. If it's not happening within you, that's God's intelligence. Now, all of us have the ability to open all seven chakra centers. All of us have the ability to have a greater relationship with the radiance of our heart, the spaciousness of our mind, the strength and power of our belly. The deep and profound solidity of consciousness. All of us have the ability to awaken to our energetic body, but some of us experience Kundalini to some degree or another. Now, Kundalini wasn't something I asked for, it was something that came to me in a huge way. And so, yes, I do talk about it often. In fact, this week I'll be a part of a conference. It's an online conference. It's called the Kundalini Summit. I believe I'll be speaking on the 2nd, on March 2nd, and it's free the day that I'm teaching. I think there's like about 20 other teachers, and each day there's a number of teachings that are offered for free. And then afterwards, of course, if you miss any of them, there'll be recordings available. For purchase, and I believe you can buy a package and listen to the whole conference if you find this interesting. And so, but please join me March 2nd if you're interested in Kundalini. But beyond Kundalini, I do speak about, I give two hour or hour and a half long talks, and And in the first talk, I speak a lot about non-dual awakening, the different levels of non-dual awakening. And in the second talk, I talk more so about how that relates to Kundalini awakening. So if you're interested, please join me for that. And also, I just want to thank everyone for all the questions, and I apologize, I wasn't able to get to all of them. Maybe I'll get to some of them this next week. I had a couple questions about free will and questions about Nisargadatta and Ramana Maharshi. But anyway, so we'll get to those later. And of course, thank you all for the donations you've offered. Thank you for the willingness to support these teachings. And I encourage you to continue to do that because that's how these teachings will continue. And just like the teachings before me were supported by donation, and the teachings that will continue after me, will be supported as well. So it's important that we give, we back to the teachings, we support them, we help them become rooted in this planet, in this world. One of the great things our world needs is more love, more peace, a peace that is rooted, a peace that is deep, a peace that actually changes the consciousness, awakens the consciousness of others. And so the more we support this, the more it grows. So thank you all so much. Thank you to the volunteers who helped me out so much. My heart goes out to you. Thank you all for your the financial contributions. If anyone wants to make one, you can visit my website, craigholiday.com. And yes, thank you for just showing up with the beauty and the innocence of your hearts. Like I always say, I feel blessed by your divine presence. So peace be with you all, and may you all have a wonderful evening or morning or what time of day it is where you are. Take good care.